Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment. Of course, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. reaction commentary series. I'm Alexis, joined by David, of course, here for the show made with a longtime S.H.I.E.L.D. fan that wants to come back on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time. We're so enjoying this reaction series. Last time, we really dove in for the first time in a big way with Mac's character and a little bit of his backstory. And now we're going to, I feel like we've been on a really good streak of solid, maybe to even more than solid episodes. Just like we're in a really fascinating time with the series where we had a couple of big things happen. And now we're getting to some more character stuff while still pushing the main plot of the arc of this season forward. And now we're moving on into what I would consider to be, you know, in retrospect, kind of a notable episode. Today we're talking about Space Time. This is episode 15 from season 3. It is written by Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancheroen. Hey, and directed by, here's another heavy hitter, Kevin Tancheroen. This, of course, is our main cast here. Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Brett Dalton, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastaker, Elizabeth Hinstridge, Henry Simmons, and Luke Mitchell, with guest appearances by Powers Booth as Gideon, Malik, Matthew Willick as Lash, Mark Dacascos as Guerra, Bjorn Jarnson as Charles Hinton, Wolfgang Baldinson as Edwin Abbott, Lola Glaudini as Polly Hinton, Marcus Flanagan as Rowan Hamilton, and Blair Underwood as Andrew Garner. This was originally broadcast on April 5th, 2016 to 2.81 million viewers. Here's some notes from the show page. Discussing Daisy Johnson's ultimate inability to change the future, Marissa Tancheroen said, "In this episode, Daisy believes her destiny is to alter this future, but it's right on the heels of us building this arc with Daisy, where she has this hubris. She has this sense of inhuman pride. The fact that she thinks she can stop the future is an example of that pride. When we build something up in a character, we like to take it away, and this is an example of that." When asked about that final scene between Melinda May and Andrew Garner and whether Garner is truly gone for good, Whedon replied, "I think so. It's a goodbye between Andrew and May, and it's a powerful one. They were both so wonderful in those scenes, and I think right now it is goodbye to Andrew, and hello to Perma Lash." As far as the filming is concerned, following the success of a single-shot sequence in the Kevin Tancheroen-directed second season episode, The Dirty Half Dozen, Marissa Tancheroen and Whedon wrote a similar single-take sequence into the script of Space Time. Kevin compared the sequence to the previous one by saying, "I don't think any one of these versions is going to be better or worse than the other. They're just going to be different. This particular one was in a smaller room, so it was a little bit more complicated. The sequence, which took 3 or 4 hours of sprints and sprints and sprints to get right, not only accommodated the actors and the camera crew in the small, intimate room, but the producers and showrunners as well, as they wished to witness the action scene unfold." Kevin Tancheroen noted that on shows like Daredevil, or The Flash, or Arrow, or any of these other superhero shows, they have a mask on and a hood or something that can cover their face. On S.H.I.E.L.D., they don't have that, and it's full out. You have to make sure that the person who is acting the part is actually physically doing it. I give all my props to Chloe for making that work. On why the series story needed the sequence, Tancheroen stated, "There hasn't been such an arc from Daisy. There has been such an arc from Daisy being on a computer or being a computer hacker to a supreme badass. I see her expertly take out every single opponent and not hide it by cutting and editing. I think it speaks volumes about how far Sky/Daisy has come as a character." In June 2016, IGN ranked this episode as the 8th best in the series, which is some pretty interesting ranking there. I, for one, remember this episode quite fondly. I think to me it was definitely one of the more, from the first time that I watched it, one of the more ambitious episodes that S.H.I.E.L.D. had done to that point. And that kind of, I think this is the primary example of what I was speaking to last week with the episode that we reacted to last time, which was Watch Dogs, in that in season three, they really did feel like they were more comfortable experimenting with different types of episodes. I feel like season two, I think it's just a better season because, I mean, maybe you could say this just a better story being told. There's a lot of new, it's a lot more expansive. There's so much more going on. But season two definitely was lacking from the standpoint of, like, for the most part, every episode in season two is this one long, continuous, interconnected story. You could even say it was a movie, right? It's just one long story happening. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't some episodes that can, like, slow down. No, it still functions as an amazing season of TV where it knows, you know, where to take a break, where to speed up the pedal and everything. It knows how to do that very well. Season three, I think many have overlooked its worth by not, I think, talking enough about the fact that Jed Moe, you know, the two creators, Jed and Marissa, felt maybe a little bit more at ease to be able to experiment a little bit here. And why I mention that is, well, and that isn't to say that the experimentation didn't come at the cost of some other characters, sure. And maybe the experimentation came, there was a need because of how much behind the scenes crap was happening that was forcing them to change their plans, whether it be their original actor for Hive not being able to really be in the season at all after, I think, one or two episodes, or the fact that the network was making them, like, write off two of their best characters out of the show. Like, that kind of meddling in the midst of all of this. But they, I think, were still willing and, I think, successful on the whole to come up with very memorable episodes. I think as a whole, season three, most diehard fans don't look back on as among the best of the seasons, as with season two. But unlike season two, I do think season three, you can begin to pick out certain episodes that can be considered to be, I see that dog hasn't died yet, or has not been evicted yet. And for those who have been watching the last month, you know I have this vendetta against that. Yeah. Just like that, my train of thought is gone. God damn it. I'm sorry. It was like, I was on a roll too, and then it was just destroyed. Okay, the point is, season three, I think, can have some episodes to offer that are far more iconic because they stand out more when it's like, oh, this is the episode where they do this, or like with Watch Dogs, oh, it's the Mac episode. And as we talked about last week, there was some really interesting things that were set up in that episode that I think didn't quite really occur to us, at least to me, in that moment. Or, of course, the whole Bobby and Hunter episode was, look, this whole thing to itself while still being a key and crucial part of this ongoing story happening in this season. So, yeah, it's a lot of hoopla to begin off with this episode and where we are with this season. David, do you have any thoughts to offer on what I've just, I mean, I'll say it's like I've been enjoying. I mean, I've always am going to enjoy, I think, any episode of the show for sure. But, like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, on rewatch, knowing now what happens, obviously, things don't seem as, I guess, not off the rails. But when I watched season 3B the first time, as the weeks went by, it did feel like there was not as much forward momentum as there was with the back half of season 2. I think that was one of the things that I began to notice. But so far, I don't know. I'm really digging, like, they don't feel necessarily the time to rush. But I do think, like, I mean, it isn't the time for that just yet, obviously. I mean, this is the, still the very first half of Season 3B.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to compare Season 3B, the beginning, to Season 2B, the beginning, I think they're delivering better episodes.
For sure.
Just so far as we are right now. David.
Yeah, no, I think for sure they are delivering better episodes. I can't really explain why, per se, right now. It's just, I think there isn't more of a rush, I guess you can say, of, you know, trying to progress the story in any way. Because for, you know, second season, for sure, you know, we were rushing on certain episodes. Like, it always just felt like one episode, we take a break, next episode, we set up. But, like, you know, it's a lot of heavy information that we get. And then right after that, it's like a big episode going on. Like, it just kind of felt like that. But with this one, you know, I feel like the last couple episodes, it felt kind of, you know, slow pace, or like, at least in terms of like progressing the story, it felt slow pace. We've been enjoying the episodes for sure, especially on rewatch. But I think we're just now in a moment where we can take our time with these characters and, you know, kind of take a breather with all of them. So, but yeah, I mean, it's still, I can still for sure say that, like, this season is better than the last two because of, probably because of that. I mean, like, they mentioned, you mentioned reading that bit in the beginning, how, you know, they saw Chloe Bennett, you know, progress her character from the hacker to the badass. And we are seeing little moments like that. Yeah, I mentioned it, I think it was in the parting shot one, where I was just like, dude, there is such a difference in fits between this season and the last season. But, like, it's so it's minor, really, but it feels really big in a sense, because we're just seeing him take more of a, well, he's not being a lead or anything, but you know, he is leading the team in some sorts and all that. With Daisy, that one just feels, it feels like a jump to where she is now, but that's only because she is the superpowered being. Whereas Fitz is all kind of slow paced in the sense, but it makes sense. And it really does kind of hit you in the like a truck going like, oh, shoot, you know, this is different. This guy's different. Awesome. So that's a really interesting part about this show, about how much, because I can't really say that for sure on the other show that I've mentioned before, Person of Interest. Right. Where I don't really feel like I've seen progression in any of the characters. Unlike these characters at all. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, for sure. These last couple of weeks, we've definitely, I think, have been picking up on some things where I'm like, huh, you've come a long way. And I just am just now noticing, just like thinking to myself about a year ago when we were reacting to season one episodes, just like, whoa, that's a big jump. And then also, like, from my end of things, is I have, like, I don't know. I don't think I have an encyclopedic memory, but it, like, seems like I do on the show and all of the minor characters or the minor, like, plot lines, like, that are coming up ahead. But, like, even me, just, like, because I'm keeping up with Ami as he's, like, watching the show. So he's about to finish season 5, which I'm really happy he's enjoying season 5, because a lot of, I think, there's a... Season 5 apparently is, like, it makes people freaking crazy. Mm-hmm. There are some people who are, like, visibly angry at, like, some of the decisions that were made with Season 5. I'm, like, a Season 5 defender. Like, I love that season.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are some pretty obvious shortcomings when we get to that point, and we'll have our say about Season 5. But I will say, the entirety of Season 5 kind of is birthed from this episode we're going to watch just now.
Yeah.
A lot of things. Like, just the whole concept of, you know, can we change time? They literally took... It was so, I think, well-received, or I guess they loved that idea so much with this episode. They took that... Okay, let's make that a whole 22-episode season about how can we have the team, like, just go against the greatest odds they ever faced and, like, try and, like, break time or, like, change time. I mean, Polly and Robin are introduced in this episode. And they're going to be a huge part mm-hmm. of that season when we get to that point. So, it's a lot. I mean, you can even argue it sets up the rest of the show too, because I mean, in a sense, season 7 is also like not like it's more like a race against time. Like when you have two opposing sides, we've got Team Shield and Team Chronicom, and they're trying to like fuck up the timeline, and but you still gotta like do a kind of a similar thing in that vein. So it's like, yeah, I mean, if anything, this episode, Space Time, is one of the most consequential ones of the whole show. Like, this episode basically sets up the rest of the series in one way or another. And it's really, really interesting. So, yeah. Do we have any comments from one of the last videos that we did? Was it for Party Shot?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. We got 3 from Party Shot and then 1 from Inside Man, actually. Well, I'll start with Inside Man.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah. well, it's just someone who we've never seen before. It's Elfitz Dindare 17. That's, I don't know how to properly say it, but yeah, Elfitz Dindare just says, it's my favorite show of all time. So, hey, cool.
Hey, awesome. You're in the right spot. I hope you keep coming back and watching along with us, because I mean, you're in good company when it comes to that kind of idea, particularly with me. Mm-hmm. I don't say it all the time, but if you go back and watch the pilot, I have this whole big spiel about how like I've like been this like fan from the very fucking beginning. I mean, so has David, but I feel like I'm much more passionate about it, because I can like I was even, oh god, it's so embarrassing to say this, but like I was even on Twitter and like giving people a bunch of like attitude over like, you know, opinions about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything. Now, if Peter were here, he'd be like, well, yeah, you dox people, right? Like, no, that's not what I did. I would just like have like, to me, I used the idea of the internet, of like having, you know, friendly fire and everything about with like, but I would not hold back, honestly, when it came to defending S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, there are a lot of, let's just say, people who were just not very smart about thinking that this show was meaningless and dumb and an embarrassment, and I kind of was not having it back in those days. So Do not look up those old tweets, goddamn. I hope I deleted all of them. they're not flattering in the least at all. That's why I don't tweet anymore. I haven't tweeted in years, I gotta tell you. I think it's been at least 5-6 years since I've tweeted, and I think I'm better for it.
But yeah,
we're gonna. I'm treating it as if I'm like 5 years sober. Like, no, don't get into that whatsoever. But thank you for the comment.
Yep, and welcome. Hope you stay.
Yeah,
yeah. And then next one's from Serenity. Before Agent Carter season 2, we saw Dark Force, aka Zero Matter, Dark Matter, in season 1 of S.H.I.E.L.D. With Marcus Daniels.
Yes,
it's also the cause of Cloak and Dagger's powers in that series, which totally forgot about. But yeah, that
is did watch Cloak and Dagger, right? I didn't watch Cloak and Dagger. Yeah,
yeah, I saw both seasons. It was fine. next one's from Shield Vids. Hey guys, always nice to see you. This episode by itself is not the best, but the ending is always the highlight on rewatch. I always imagine their adventures after the series, fighting ninjas and just getting into crazy stuff until season 5. One theory I had was they were snapped at the end of season 5, which is why we don't see them return, which I like it, you know? It's a good enough reason for them not to be there.
I mean, sure, but that would also have to make you kind of decide where in the hell in the timeline of those 5 years with 6 and 7 happened, because, I mean, supposedly by the end of season 7, Endgame happened. Mm-hmm. No, by the end of season 7 and S.H.I.E.L.D. is able to fix what happened to them, Endgame happened, but Endgame takes place in the year 2023, but S.H.I.E.L.D. season 6 happens in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, again, like if you want to put it in your headcanon, sure, you can go ahead and do that. Those discussions purposefully we've been putting off until we get to season 7, because I don't know, I'm not even sure if we're sure how we're going to reconcile those things as they happen, you know? Yeah. Ami is about to watch, I think, the episodes where they mention Thanos, and I'm like, well, good luck trying to, like, even gauge, like, where he's, there's even, like, in at the end of season 5, they mention Thanos, like, 2 or 3 times, and then they even have, like, allusions to, like, are you seeing this crazy shit happening in New York City? Like, that, I think that's...
It's...
And then nothing happens after that.
Yeah, pretty
so
much.
So it's like...
After that, they just got zero information. They really did the best they could try to fit it in, but then they got screwed over. So...
Yeah, and I also do wonder, though, it's like, you have to question the business decision of Jeff Loeb, because he was the head honcho for Marvel television, Marvel Entertainment Television. He had all those shows, you know, Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, all the Defenders shows on Netflix. They had one crossover show called Defenders, but maybe, I don't know, if I were Jeff Loeb, I would be sprinkling S.H.I.E.L.D. characters. Like, I think it would have been cool if Bobby and Hunter showed up on Daredevil, helping out to fight off the Hand or something. Like, hey, that would have been great, like, crossover. Like, and that you could do, because Marvel Studios was not involved. Despite what that goddamn Disney Plus page would have you believe, no, Marvel Studios had no creative involvement whatsoever in anything regarding the Netflix stuff. But now they want to, like, flaunt it as part of, like, their prestige and pristine MCU timeline. Get the fuck out of here. We see what you're doing. And by the way, it's like, most people are like, as I called it from the very beginning, it's like, sure, like, there are two Daredevil shows. One you made, one actual good people made, and people can tell the difference. Anyway, do we have any more comments?
Last one from Silver Sofa. Hello, my fellow agents. Hope all is good. Yeah, I'm going to be that fan. I was very happy at the end of the episode, LOL. Although I was sad to see Bobby leave, and even annoying Mac made me cry. double hot take here. I find this episode to be overhyped, as much as 4,722 hours is. I understand both are beloved by most AOS fans, but they don't hit the same way for me, obviously. I think that's because I really didn't adore Simmons until season 4. I never liked Hunter, lol. Next episode is weak for me too, but episode 15 is quite awesome. With all the chaos in the world, I just want to say thanks for providing a place where we can escape to enjoy what we love, AOS.
Honestly, especially these days, with what's going on, and we'll do that for as long as we can until we're pulled from the airwaves and everything. Mm. It's not as if there's anything happening, you know, in the world right now where things are looking dodgy. I appreciate everybody who feels like they have a friend in us with this common show that we happen to quite love for, and honestly, and I think it's awesome for very different reasons. I love it when people have differing perspectives, because I think it would be quite boring when, like, people all agree on, like, what's the best and what's the worst. And I am quite curious. This was Silva, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they would like, I'm really curious to hear from you about what you consider to be the most underappreciated episode of the whole show. You've got like 136 episodes to choose from. Maybe it could have been one you've already, like, mentioned in these first 3 seasons, or it could be some other one that, I don't know, that we haven't even gotten to yet, but, like, maybe there's an episode. I mean, I feel like there are always episodes that people talk about whether or not they love or they hate, but where's one that you feel that maybe you're alone in thinking, like, oh, yeah, this is, like, a series great episode, and no one of the fans, I think, talk about it as much. I feel like for me, if there's an episode where I remember feeling like, oh my god, this is fantastic, this is incredible, this show is, like, really killing it, and I think it has a lot to do about where it was placed. It was, like, the second or third to last episode in the Ghostwriter arc in season 4. And you have to keep in mind, my mindset when I watched this episode was like, wow, this show is getting better and yet the ratings are getting lower and the media is like ignoring it and it may get canceled. So I was feeling all kinds of way back in 2016 when this was happening. I believe it was called Deals with Our Devils, which is the episode where Fitz, Coulson, and Robbie Reyes are getting pulled into a dark dimension and no one else can see them. And so they have to use magic through Ada and Dr. Radcliffe in the Darkhold to kind of get them back because they were kind of slipping and slipping away. I think to me that is one of the more extraordinary moments of the whole show that people don't seem to really ever talk about. I've seen more people talk up, I believe, the third episode of season 4 called Uprising. That's the blackout episode. That's a phenomenal episode too. I think I've been seeing some more, I think, praise on that one. But Deals with Our Devils is one that I feel like not many other, if at all, people talk about as like one of the better episodes of the whole show. So yeah, Silva, if you want to go ahead and like do that, you can. And hopefully we can get it on for whenever, I guess. I know we're a little bit behind on like the weeks, or I guess we're lagging on, like, I don't know what happened. Do we have any more?
That's all.
All right, let's go ahead and get into today's episode, Space Time. I should also mention it has one of my favorite themes from Bear McCreary in the show. It's a brand new theme called Robin's Theme, or at least I call it Robin's Theme. I don't know what he calls it personally, but I think it's, to me, a beautiful piece. I mean, everything he does, beautiful piece of music. But I think it's, I don't know. Bear sometimes just makes these beautiful, like, motifs. And I'm like, why aren't people talking about him more? Why aren't people talking about the music in this show more? Now, I get it. It's a TV show. It's not a movie level, like, score. But Bear has, throughout the 7 seasons of this show, created quite a library of motifs. And Robin's Theme, as I call it here, is such a beautiful piece of music. And it gets used a lot, obviously, in season 5. It really is. And I think he even kind of used that motif to kind of like create all these new themes with season 5 that I think were quite memorable. So you're going to hear it right off the bat after the previously on, I think. Or maybe even it is. Well, you'll see it. You'll hear it, I think. It's like, it's pretty striking piece of music that you don't really hear at, you know, anywhere else in the show until we get more into the 5th season. So with that, let's go ahead and begin the episode in 3, 2, 1, and go. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I believe it'll start right here. And I don't know if you caught that, but it begins with this beautiful shot of that robin bird carving. Is it called a carving or wood carving?
Yeah, carving.
Okay. So automatically, this opening here is just like, oh, we're going for something different here. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, this has to be one of the best like openings of any episode of the show, because automatically you're like, okay, I'm in. I don't know what this is. And the show knows itself, because like, we're automatically jumping into it. We're not starting off at the base and like, good morning, how are you doing? And it's like, no, we're jumping right on this, because the episode knows we got you already. We're going to go and head straight into it.
Mm.
And we're going to start off with the team just being like, who? What? Yeah, because like, I don't know if this is from a costume design standpoint. The first time we see that particular jacket that Coulson has on, we see it, I think, throughout the rest of the show. I know I'm just mentioning a jacket, but I think it looks cool with the blue button-up shirt that he has. And you will see it a lot. By the way, this is crazy off the bat already. Oh, yeah. It's like, we're not even, 5 minutes in? And this kind of carnage, like out of nowhere, like ambush. And of course, it makes it far more interesting. Like, you know, it's like, okay, apparently this guy saw the future, because it's all happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then this part. And that's pretty brutal, too. The way he went out. Like, that's not, like, a clean... And it is a brilliant moment here for Chloe Bennett. Just like being so overwhelmed. I think it really speaks to how real those visions felt.
Mm-hmm.
How just like distraught she was. And I feel like this is the first real scene we're going to have of like a Hive Ward here. You have the world.
I know. You really have everything else you could want.
Like, the setting is perfect because, like, look at that spread he has on the table. And we've seen the last few, like, four or five episodes, him just strut himself around to, like, any world leader and just, like, at the palm of his hand, he can just have whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, I really don't understand what he's saying here. Like, I get the part of, you know, as time is moving along, that is set and all that, especially when you see it in the future, when you see the future. I get that, but everything else, I'm so confused about it. The two dimensions, three dimensions thing.
Yep.
But it's also kind of cool that we get more and more into that conversation as the season progresses, because I do remember, well, I saw Omni's reactions to the season 5 and all that, and Fitz and Deke mainly, he's talking about, like, hey, I'm from the future, came back from the past, you know, like, can't this be like a thing of alternate
multiverse.
Universe, yeah, the multiverse of it all. It's like one little decision can cause like one, you know, millions of other causes and all that. And so basically, like, the conversation just keeps getting more deeper and deeper and confusing, yeah, in a sense, but, you know, at least they're having it.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I don't think a lot of people our age have seen the original Terminator, honestly. It's always just been the second one.
Yeah. The way she said that was like, obviously, in reference to a lot of the things that she's experienced. But at the same time, didn't I mention how in a lot of ways this sets up the rest of the show? Changing the past, changing regrets in each of the team members' lives, which is the framework or the LMD arc, which is going to happen in the next season. So, hey, it's a bit of a preview for what's to come pretty soon.
curious why he didn't control that guy, the guy who can see the futures.
Huh.
Because there could have been the scene where he controls him, and maybe he comes in all, like, you know, freshly shaved or something, with a suit or nice clothing at the very least, and, you know, does whatever he says.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I can understand if maybe he's like, eh, the power's not that interesting to me. I don't want him. Like, I can understand that, but I don't know. Could also have been a cool setup to show, like I said before, how they're being mind controlled, but they're still very much themselves and all that. I don't know.
It's interesting because, in a way, like, Hive is basically giving Malik what he's wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. But at the same time, Hive's like, he has his own plan already in motion that's going to undo Malik completely.
kind of interesting that Ward has always been on the other end of this. Like, always been the one told to, like, hey, you take, you know, take stuff into your own hands and all that, blah, blah, blah. But now it's all reversed.
Now it's him doing, powerful.
It's cool. You know, character progression. That's a cool catch from Lincoln, too. Like, what the hell?
It's hilarious because it's just like, this just came the fuck out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were all ready to go. And then this shit happens, so. Yeah, at this point, you're just like, yeah, maybe Fitz had a point.
Mm-hmm.
Him saying Sky is like really a good way to kind of like sell this moment of like he's really worried about her going into this because we don't know what comes after. I do think this is the last time I think he calls her Sky until I guess Framework happens. Or maybe this is the last time he says Sky until it's Sarge Coulson. In season 6. he's not wrong.
Hmm.
Oh.
That's such a cool way to reveal it to them too. Because it is kind of like a blink and you miss it moment. So I'm sure, like, a lot of them for sure were like, did I just see what I just saw? You know?
That was the best way to do that. Because they're like, I mean, Coulson's in the middle of a sentence and it's just like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then him looking at the camera too, like, I know you see me. It's like, what the fuck?
All right. So far, so good. This looks awesome. Like, already.
It's one shot.
Jeez.
That probably would have been an edit right there when she went under the desk, but still good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would have really liked to see what their conversation would have been about in that moment, you know? I feel like she would have brought up Daisy more. Probably would have pushed her to be like, hey, you should hang out with her more. I'm very curious what the actor felt in this scene, like putting on the exoskeleton stuff. Like,
right.
Was he excited for it, or I don't know.
Yeah, took about three seasons, but okay. Might as well. And then here we are.
kind of interesting how they ended it with the Robin. I'm sure they were just thinking like, oh, it's gonna be a sad shot because he's not, you know, gonna be with his daughter or anything. But on rewatch, it's kind of it's interesting to watch because it's like, yeah, like you mentioned before starting the episode, this kicks off so many other things throughout the rest of the series and all that, and it's just kind of like, oof, that's the first, you know, domino effect right there.
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and jump into Ami.
But yeah, he saw something and it's got him freaking out. He's like, you're my security guy. You need to be by me 24/7. That's what I'm paying you for. But he doesn't realize that he's not in control of any of this anymore. As much as he's trying to get power, he's completely lost it all to this entity. I don't know. The whole thing with whatever he's building and cultivating here, now he's after something else that this, the same company was building, not this whole, you know, exoskeleton suit thing, but something else he's actually after. You know, he's gathering in humans. He's infecting them with pretty much himself. And Lash fulfills this purpose of hunting down inhumans in a point in time where inhumans are just being born left and right without any kind of thought or control. So he's kind of built in a way, I would assume, to keep their species in check without throwing itself out of balance. And he's got this, like, internal instinctual urge that what he's doing is for a greater good. Whether he agrees with it or not, that's what he feels. I think he's going to end up being pivotal towards stopping Ward at this point. That's my prediction right now. But it sucks all at the same time, because I was really hoping, I mean, they all were as well, that this experiment, Creel's blood, you know, preventing the transition, the change from human to inhuman, the process had already begun. He had crystallized. It hadn't completed, so they didn't know. They didn't know if it was going to work. And it seems like, well, I mean, it didn't. He changed in the end. But I'm hoping, I'm going to hold out hope that maybe once they finish this whole thing with Ward and this inhuman of death and his legions, maybe that primal directive Lash has will dissipate and maybe Andrew will be able to return, at least maybe not in physical form to the way he used to be, but maybe his mind will be at ease. That's my hope. It may be a little naive, a little optimistic, but that's what I would like to see. Or by the end of it all, they're just all going to go down. But I like that they tie this into Reyna, this guy's gift, who is very Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose from The X-Files. Again, I have to bring it up when it comes up. Almost exactly the same gift that character had in that, except there was no physical contact needed, but he could see anyone's death. Get details of it, lead-ups, all kinds of different things like this. Once those visions came into being, they did become locked. They became fixed. Some of these things did play out. And I like that idea. And Fitz's even description of time, you know, and of precognition like this and glimpsing the future. We see it in a lot of different storylines and stuff like that. And then this persistence and this, like, denial of fate, you know, our resistance to that. And then because of that, we end up creating the circumstance ourselves. There's a lot of great time travel stories that really kind of delve into the same thing as well. I don't want to say just in case, because there are some that are really good. There's one in particular that I'm thinking of that I have reacted to. I didn't know it was time travel related when I started it, and it made the journey way more fun. So I don't want to ruin it for anybody else who's going to go into it. But side tangent, since I'm telling you nothing, and there's not even a recommendation at the end of it because I can't tell you what it is. I mean, if you see my reactions, you could probably pick it out. But anyway, side tangent. Logical fallacies and laws surrounding time travel and these things. I like the way they explained it, and I like the way that everything played out. And even the way it kind of teed up the reveal that Ward is around. Coulson's face alone, priceless. And just for a little split second, and that one split second threw the entire wrench in their entire plan out the window. Like, they were doing this, like, Edge of Tomorrow, reset, rewind, perfect this outcome, this strategy to get our time down to make sure we're doing this as quickly and as accurately as possible to try to change things, but that's the thing. We're missing details. We can't. Like, it's just like, oh, it's so well done. It was so good. The way they kind of parsed out this story and all these little things would just kind of throw this little wrench into it. As much as they try to control it, it just slips through your fingers. I loved the depiction here. And like Gideon was saying at the end too, when he got a taste of this power and his hubris was taking control, that was very much so, hell, like in the last episode, Daisy thinks, you know, now that she's got a control this power, she's embracing the side of herself and all this kind of stuff. She's being very reckless. When you get a feel for this power and you realize the strength that you're carrying around, if you're not humble with it or respect that power, you could find yourself into positions where you underestimate a situation. You get in too deep because you think you handle more. You think you're invincible. You think just because you're more human than other humans, you have a leg up or you can't be caught unawares. And it's just not true. And every step of the way, like, she had to be saved here. You know, she got Fitz in trouble in the last episode. You know, it's just like she's been very, I love that she's accepting this side of herself. I love that she's proud of who she is. Like, there's a lot of sides of this that are fantastic. I love what's happening with her. However, she is a little drunk on her power. They did a really good job in the last episode paralleling her characterization, her journey with that of Mac's brother as well as Lincoln in the last episode as like a little comparative kind of forked road kind of situation. And then here they had her in a similar path and trajectory thematically with Gideon of all people. And since his daughter was introduced, we haven't cut back to her at all. Not yet. So I'm wondering if she's going to carry on after whatever fucking ending he saw for himself here. And she'll carry on the family business after that. Or she'll be, will she come in the back half of this and have a little bit more weight to throw around? I like the whole stuff, like everything that they got with like Simmons and Fitz in this, especially by the end, is like, I guess, you know, some things are inevitable. It's like, I guess we should hold hands now. That was cute. That was fun. I love that. It was like, hey, with everything going on, it was like, I guess we should hold hands. It gave me like Mortal Kombat vibes, like the original movie. It was like, this is the part where you fall down. I guess this is the part where we hold hands. And then, you know, the inevitability of Fitzsimmons being a thing, you know, no matter what gets thrown their way, they are still always by each other's side. And I swear to God, if something fucks this up down the road, I will scream. Yeah, I don't know. I liked the way they well. Really handled this episode and dabbled with this. Like, I don't know, this problem of fate getting glimpses of the future and trying to change the course of what we've seen. I don't know. And just the way that we're just kind of locked into certain things. I mean, hell, I've had glimpses of the future. You know, you can call it deja vu, you can call it whatever, but I've had dreams many years before the exact situation would play out. Conversation, setting, people, all of it in detail, even years before I would even meet some of the players that were even in the said dream. You could argue like, oh, the mundaneness of life and you have like a repetitive nature or anything like that. Some things your brain could kind of construct itself. But like I played Dead Space before Dead Space ever came out with a guy that I had never met, which eventually was my roommate. And there was that game. There's some things that are just a little too specific. And that was like 2-3 years before I even met any of those people. You know, I've had a lot of situations like that. But the thing is, you know, in that instance, at least one reason I remember specifically having that dream about the game was because I woke up that morning being like, damn, that was actually a really cool game. And I actually woke up a little disappointed that it didn't exist. But give it a couple years later, and it did. And I was there, same couch, same game, same setup, same everything with this person I am now friends with that I didn't know at the time playing this game. Fucking wild. How do you explain that? I don't know, man. And I know I talk about it all the time. But again, I think if you like the show, I think you'd really love X-Files. I think I've touched on everything. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to you guys. So
I saw the...
That is...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I saw the first two episodes of X-Files and... I don't know. I couldn't get that into it, but...
X-Files, I don't know if I would get into it, but I don't know. It's X-Files to me is just like a mystery of the week, right?
Yeah, it's basically that. But, you know, you have one who's very skeptical and the other who's like all in. You know, that's like,
yeah.
Someone says there's a werewolf, he's going to be like, yep, there's a werewolf. And so that's kind of the whole thing. But I don't know. I saw the first two and something about it couldn't get into it. Maybe I need to give it another shot because maybe I just wasn't in the right state of mind to like critique it.
I mean, it's hard to be in the right state of mind for anything these days. That's for sure. And sometimes if you're not in the right, you know, mood for it, you're just not going to glean onto it. But I can't speak for any of that because I don't think I've ever watched the show, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild though what he was saying about like years before meeting this person and this game existing, he played it in his mind and it just like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Like that's but sometimes I mean maybe that's where deja vu comes from. There are some times where literally shot for shot, angle for angle, colors, lighting, people in the exact same spots, all of a sudden, usually I think, well, not usually, but sometimes I'm like, wait a minute, didn't I live this before?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my God. I don't know. This is why sometimes I'm like, I'm glad I don't remember most of my dreams. Some of my dreams.
I know. I for sure get weird dreams. I especially hate it when like I wake up and I try to go back to sleep, but then those are the moments where I get like very vivid dreams where like, you know, I'm back at work, you know, driving or something, or when I used to work at the grocery store, I would just be dreaming of me, you know, putting stuff on shelves and all that, and I'm like, ugh, I hate that feeling because for one thing I don't want to be at work, but then also I don't know. It just feels way too real. Like I'm really feels like I'm holding an object in my hand or something, and I don't like it. And I've for sure gotten so those deja vu moments for sure. Usually when like you know I'm eating, and I feel like I'm just in the exact same spot and having the exact same conversation with someone. I'm like, what the fuck? But the closest to even coming to what Omni did. It wasn't so much like I saw the future or anything like that. It was just this feeling of, you know, something's about to pop up. And it was when I was working at the grocery store. It was at night, the store's closed, so I'm by myself in the aisles. And I was listening to this song. And whenever I play that song, it always reminds me of the Percy Jackson books. Just something about it. I'm like, oh, it fits to what the character, you know, is and what they went through and what they're going through in their whole journey. And for some reason, when I played it one time, I was like, I had this feeling of drop everything and read the book. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, I just had this urge to just walk out of the store and start reading the book. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? That's weird. I didn't obviously do it or anything, but the next night I played the song again. And again, just that same urge to just drop everything and read the first book specifically too. You know, not the... It's Percy Jackson, Olympians, then it's Heroes of Olympus and all that. Very specifically the first one. And I listened to the audiobook just to finally get that urge out. And I'm like, okay, cool, listening to it. And then, like I said, since I work nights, I go in the morning or come back home in the morning. And I sleep till the afternoon. I go to sleep, open my phone, or when I wake up, open my phone, the first thing there, new Percy Jackson and the Olympians book coming out. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, is my mind preparing for are this you, moment?
this is the thing. It's like, I don't know. Can we like this? There are theories of people that I don't know. Somehow we have the ability. Our dreams can transcend time and space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is. I mean, this is going to get this gets into a whole other kind of podcast.
No, yeah, I know. But like,
go any further, it's like, yeah. But I agree with you. Sometimes our dreams are just like a little too real, mm-hmm. honestly. It's creepy. Yeah. I'm getting creeped out just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
But yeah, that was the closest, I guess, to getting a glimpse of the future. I don't know. But it was a weird moment for me.
Yeah. Talk about That's So Raven. Let's see here. Eric Goldman, IGN. Yeah, day got weirder. Let me just say that this is one of my favorite episodes of this season. Space Time was a pretty dark episode, and sad, but by the show's usual standards. As the team tried and failed to save a homeless man with the ability to cause those he touched to see the future. And it all ended with Daisy getting that oh-so-ominous vision of that seemingly final moment on board a spaceship. Obviously, the most obvious reading of this is that Daisy herself will die. But as this episode proved, the visions caused by these abilities could be misinterpreted, so I'm guessing something else is occurring here. Either somebody else's death or a situation Daisy is in that isn't what we think that it is. The entire scenario with using Daisy's vision to train May to fight off those Hydra agents was fun and cool, a clever twist on how to make use of this type of prophetic vision. The idea of rehearsing the fight was really entertaining to see play out, and when it came time for Daisy to have to do it instead of May, it was very satisfying as well. Kudos to returning director Kevin Tancharoen and Chloe Bennett, who once more teamed up to bring a Daisy kicks ass in a single take action scene after that one they did together last year. In general, this was a big action-packed episode, from the cop car blowing up in the Hydra attack early on to a big final fight off of the rooftop. I chuckled a bit at Hive now wearing flowering Voldemort-like robes, but having Gideon get that exoskeleton power up, as it were, at Hive's urging, as an exciting turn of events. And damn, even seeing the beginning of Gideon using that guy's head was, of crushing that guy's head was pretty brutal. Oh yeah, that did happen. I was like, completely forgot that happened. All right, let's look at Alex McLevy, AV Club. Sometimes execution is everything. In athletic competition, in science, in any number of aspects of life, it's all about timing, strategy, and pulling off planned actions in exactly the manner intended. Space Time, tonight's S.H.I.E.L.D. episode, makes for an excellent example of the value of executing a plan properly, and not just because the narrative is explicitly about planning the ideal action. No, it's also because sometimes you can plan and prepare and lay the groundwork for everything you want to do, and it still doesn't work. You can think you can see everything that's going to happen until suddenly you realize there's a one-way mirror and it changes everything. This episode was executed very well, making sure every image paid off and every beat landed, and yet it didn't quite live up to its potential. The idea of challenging predestination, of seeing the future and doing everything you can to resist it, is a compelling one, but it adds a metatextual level to the traditional concept of Greek tragedy. In stories like Oedipus Rex, the notion that fate cannot be changed is what lends gravitas and pathos to the events unfolding. The best time travel movies that have always played around with this question, as Primer, 12 Monkeys, and Looper, follow people who know what's going to happen, do their best to change it, and end up in exactly the place they didn't want to be. Charles Hinton, the cursed inhuman, seer of tonight's episode, was doomed to deliver only news of death. But, as is so often the case with these narratives, it was the same curse that finally allowed him to do some good. He saved Daisy at the cost of his life. The build-up to tonight's big showdown was a hell of a lot of fun. From the moment Charles first touches the doomed restaurant owner, the audience knew it was only a matter of time before he passed on a vision to a member of the team, and the entertainment lay in watching the inevitability of things play out exactly as Daisy saw them. The metatextual level was nicely conveyed by Fitz during this his paper demonstration of how we're unable to change the future. It's a tricky concept to wrap your head around, but the two-dimension/three-dimension example was a simple enough point of not for me. Even so, Coulson did everything right if your plan is to try and spit in the face of Fitz's scientific certainty. He orders everyone to make Daisy's glimpse of the future impossible. Daisy stays at HQ, Coulson won't pick up a gun, and Fitzsimmons just needs to stay out of the damn snow. and one by one, all the planning is for naught. The most perfunctory of these guarantees of fate was the meeting between May and Andrew. He turns himself in before his final transformation, thereby pulling May off the plan and allowing them to have one more conversation, this time with enough allegorical weight to sink a hot air balloon. Most of this exchange felt unnecessary, meaning May was right, but it was still a genuine and touching beat to have Andrew insist he wouldn't change a moment of their lives together, because they were the best of times, or at least they were the best times he'd ever have. Of course, it would have landed a little harder had we not just established that Andrew would change the past in a heartbeat to avoid becoming Lash. But you can't have everything. Excuse me. Okay. Still, don't tell that to Gideon Malik, Hydra's human boss, already being usurped by its inhuman boss as the Stinger, with Brett Dalton and Mark Dacascos proved, spent this episode as the flip side of the coin to the S.H.I.E.L.D. team, doing his best to bring about an outcome his family and organization have spent generations trying to ensure. Fate was a bit more ironic in its handling of Malik than the others, as it delivered something he'd longed for, only to then pair it with a worrying vision. Hive was very clear about what he would give Malik, true power, and the exoskeleton demonstrated at least the beginning of that promise. How unfortunate, then, that whatever Malik was shown in Charles's vision shook him up so badly. They're keeping it from us, but here's my best guess. Malik had a vision of Hive's death. Why else would he immediately call Mr. Guerra to urge him to remember to be loyal to Malik and not their inhuman savior? Sure, he could have seen his own death, but that doesn't have quite the pop of seeing the future demise of the creature around which he's built his entire life. Ends up being wrong, but yeah. So let's talk about that execution, the topic of which I started this review. S.H.I.E.L.D. still gets wobbly sometimes when trying to execute complicated action sequences, and tonight was one of those uneven situations. The practice rounds were great, watching May be guided through the process of taking down a room of Hydra goons in time to save Charles made for a great, a neat tactic, even if it was never really clear just how thorough Daisy's vision was until that moment. But once the team realized Ward was there and everyone raced to the rescue, it just lacked sufficiently frenetic pacing. Daisy's version of the room fight was strong, but after that, the camera kept cutting between the various players so much, it didn't allow for much investment in any of the arena. Director Kevin Tancheron is one of the show's best assets, but for whatever reason, whenever the action sequences paused, the events would happen in between all the kicking and punching lacked verve. Perhaps the show telegraphed all these beats a little bit too heavily in advance. Plus, to some extent, a letdown was inevitable. There's that word again. The very nature of Hive meant Coulson's order to avoid him guaranteed the experiential equivalent of driving past the fireworks factory. Even so, there was a lot more this episode that did right than wrong. Hive's new Matrix-E look was a welcome transformation, and seeing him strip the flesh from the Transia executives was a good reminder of his power. And after Daisy's ill-considered threats to humans last week, it was important to show she can still play well with others. Similarly, Lincoln's new non-annoying behavior suits him well. His discussion with Coulson about the potential need for these various inhuman powers smartly paralleled Andrew's warning to May about Lash, that he's fighting for a cause we don't understand yet. The inhuman population has a role to play in the coming weeks that is unknown to any of them. And as Daisy learns in these final moments, it's going to take the team well outside of their comfort zone, all the way to space, in fact, which also is interesting, because I guess if you want to read that a different way, this is me taking away from the review, just me speaking freely. One way, I guess you could also read this if you want to really read into it. Another way in how this episode kind of sets up the rest of the series, space is going to be a big part of the rest of the show going forward. So, true. As Mac would say, By the time we get to the fifth season, it's the one thing we haven't done yet. So that's really, really interesting how that happens. Stray observations. I never saw the original Terminator. You're off the team. Lincoln's shown some more personality in the past two episodes than in the entire first half of the season.
Yep.
That's okay. I find it very telling that Hive found it worthwhile to hold on to Coulson's hand. It seems a certain alien entity isn't quite as above human concerns as it may think. Did anyone else share a knowing moment of sympathy when Coulson accidentally called Daisy Sky? It's comforting knowing that even the show admits it's a tough adjustment to make. It's rather not admit the number of times I've had to delete Sky after typing it during these reviews. Melinda May doesn't have time for your nonsense. That's a dumb question. Maybe some things are inevitable. Are you trying to make me cry, Simmons? Good God. Okay. That's all I got for this week in this episode. I mean, ultimately, I feel like it is one of the more entertaining episodes. I think it's a rather intriguing episode from the standpoint of, like, for the first time, the team is given a task that they can't really quite solve. In fact, you have to really ask yourself, did they really win this episode? I really think no. I think they gave it their best college try, as some would say, and they kind of failed miserably. Like, they were really trying to go for it, and it just, which, cool, whenever that happens, you know? It's like, it's rare, right? That they set out to do something, and it just ends up failing so spectacularly. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what more there is to say. I mean, it is, I think, truly, the more I think about it, the more... And you have to think to yourself, it's just like this, like, well, I mean, Charles Hinton and Robin are not the first in humans that have precognitive abilities. They won't be the last. There'll be other characters, in fact. But yeah, I guess there's another way also. How, again, it's, this episode just seems to just be like, hey, I hope you like this, because a lot of the rest of the show is going to be just like this, which is great, because this is one of the more entertaining episodes of the season, for a lot of really interesting reasons. And, yeah, I mean, I guess you could make an argument that they don't really handle Lash all that well in this second half of the season, because after this, I think maybe you see him one more time.
Yeah, probably.
So I think that might be one of the things that when we get to that point, we may have to look back and consider, okay, did we make the most use out of this character with the time that we had? Similarly, I mean, I guess if we're going to consider these last two episodes, Lincoln says he's improved.
Yeah, I mean, very little. Should have.
That's the thing, though. It's like, we're how many episodes into the season? 13, 14?
15.
This was 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just not much with them.
No, there isn't. So it's like, there's that, too. So, yeah, really, really curious decisions being made here. Overall, love the show. Having a great time. And even though I'm dying literally right now, I had a great time watching the episode with you. So thank you all for tuning in and watching, and hope you come back next week. Until then, I'm gonna go to bed. Bye-bye.
Bye.